Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's lecture on understanding users in digital service design. Tuunanen and Peffers in their paper said that information systems are intended to provide value to their users, meaning a specific population. And so it is not enough for the system designers to imagine themselves in the role of the population members and storyboard themselves through the system's use. This paper refers to the term population, meaning current or potential customers or users whose preferences might be meaningful and valuable for defining systems' functional requirements. Now, the problem is basically that while we already know that to some extent it is beneficial to involve customers in the design process, the ways in which we involve them must somehow be tailored according to the population's needs. Also, some populations are not easy to engage with when trying to elicit system requirements. That means that if we were to use some one-size-fits-all approach in the requirements elicitation, it would be likely that we were not able to really understand those users who aren't so keen to engage or who haven't been able to engage in that particular manner in the first place. So Tuunanen and Peffers map diverse population states and their challenges, and they showcase examples of how we could use the personal construct theory, the diffusion of innovation theory, information theory, social actor theory, and the systems theory of disability for better understanding the target population's needs in information systems design. And so these theories are used in the paper to engage with potential system users for eliciting and determining features and functionalities for the designed services. And they start by utilizing the personal construct theory for addressing the challenge that understanding users' preferences and reasoning is difficult due to differences in values, assumptions, beliefs, and mental models of how the world works. Consider, for instance, when navigating the grocery store, you typically know how to behave, that you might find some cards that allow you to stock up on more items. You expect to find the fruit section somewhere quite close to the entrance, and you usually know that you need to weigh your items yourself, or they might be then weighed for you at the cashier. Similarly, you are aware that leaving the grocery store is usually only through the checkouts, not through the entrance, and so forth. So knowing all these things about the grocery store functionalities allows us to function efficiently. But when you go to a totally different culture and visit the grocery store, you might find yourself a bit lost at first. That's because your personal construct of the grocery store might not match the reality of grocery stores that are typical in that cultural environment. The personal construct theory was developed in the 50s by George Kelly. So Kelly understood that different people view the world differently, and he modeled this in his clinical work by explaining how certain relationships among states of the universe are connected to the perceived consequences of those states and further to the perceived impact of those consequences on an individual person's values. And so the Tuunanen and Peffers paper advocates for the personal construct theory-based data gathering techniques for learning about people's knowledge structures. This could be quite beneficial for service managers, designers, and developers as they allow you to obtain an in-depth understanding of not only the target user's preferences, but also the reasons for those preferences, especially when there's a diverse group of target users who most likely view the world rather differently. So in the paper, the personal construct theory was applied by using laddering interviews in a proof of concept validation study wherein the researchers were able to collect and interpret thousands of requirements altogether. And second, Tuunanen and Peffers apply the diffusion of innovation theory for addressing the challenge that users' willingness and ability to participate in requirements acquisition activities varies a lot. According to the theory, such variation can be affected by their varied knowledge and of their attitudes toward new technologies, as well as their tolerance for risk. Diffusion of innovation theory is typically represented in the S curve, and we also have that illustrated here on the slide. Okay, and we are particularly interested in the lead users group, which tends to adopt innovations very early on in the curve. And that is because we know that as the lead users adopt a specific system or a service, then that can predict the adoption by a larger mass market in future periods, particularly the level of eventual adoption and the pace of adoption, which is very interesting. So that's why lead users have been rather well used in innovation research, and actually using lead users in co-innovation or co-design has been shown to lead to higher performance in product development and marketing. So instead of using all the target users in the co-development or requirements acquisition, it could be a better idea to just use the lead users who have the capability to imagine what could be useful for themselves in the future markets and technological advancements. In comparison, slow adopters may be reluctant to imagine or even participate, so the results would then not be as promising as when using lead users. As an example, Tuunanen and Pfeffers were involved in developing ideas for a new mobile-based financial services, and for that they used the snowball sampling technique to locate 32 lead users who all agreed to participate, and the outcome was literally hundreds of ideas. So they were able to develop relevant proof of concepts back in the day of the mobile banking services, which actually resemble remarkably the ones that we are still using today. The authors also used the media richness and information theory for tackling the divergent understandings among different users about the meaning and value of functional preferences. Media richness refers to the media's capability to carry complex, multidimensional information and cues that help message recipients to better understand the intended message. Furthermore, in the media synchronicity, it's important to convey sufficient information that is essential for individuals in order to reach correct conclusions. Additionally, convergence of information and opinions is necessary for the group to be able to act together with synchronicity and with a common understanding. And so the implications for requirements acquisition are that the activities should be designed so that the communication elements provide the sufficiency and richness to communicate users' preferences. And also, the design should allow for rehearsability and reprocessability so that we could achieve a joint understanding within a population. This could be done with ideation workshops, decision support tools, evaluation surveys, and upgrade roadmaps, for instance. And next, Tuunanen and Pfeffers also introduce how the social actor theory can be utilized for tackling the challenge that users' preferences may be affected by the environments in which they live and work in, and by the roles that they adopt, and all these are based on multiple identities that they might have in those environments. So accordingly, the social actor theory views system users' characteristics and behavior in the context of those roles that may be defined by social systems. These roles can be viewed from three dimensions, which are identities, affiliations, and environments. And basically, Tuunanen and Pfeffers state that when beliefs, values, and preferences seem to differ within a population by identities, environments, and affiliations, the requirements acquisition efforts should try to understand how the preferences of a subpopulation's members are related to their various roles, and then structure the system design elements accordingly. Okay, and the application of social actor theory was demonstrated in the paper through qualitative thematic analysis. There was this Nokia digital service development case where the study found significant differences among users' preferences about the use and importance of different uses of presence data across the three studied locations. And finally, the systems theory of disability is used to address the challenge that users have in their ability to participate in requirements acquisition activities. And it's suggested that this affects their preferences for system functionality in general. As you read in the paper, the idea bases on the assumption that most of us are or will someday face barriers to participation at some dimension and in some social systems. These could be, for instance, learning disabilities that affect our daily lives as academics and students, or they could be something more temporary, such as a condition that affects your ability to join a class, for instance. already in the social system, such as the education offered here at the university, is only concerned with ability dimensions that affect the students' and teachers' participation within that system. So only specific types of abilities or lack of abilities are relevant to the university teaching and its design, and the same would go for other systems, other social systems as well. Right, and bringing this theory to the requirements acquisition context, Tuoninen and Pfeffer state that when the ability of population members to participate is rather limited, then managers and designers need to accommodate technical and social barriers as well as other barriers that could result from different participation costs. And that would be to promote equal accessibility. And the goal, of course, here would be to effectively include these population members in requirements acquisition activities and thereby understand their preferences and values as well. For instance, we could recruit participants by referral, provide access to recordings or transcriptions, and we could organize remote interviews when needed. In their study with blind and visually impaired people, Tuoninen and Pfeffer found that preferences most rated by the participants were actually equally important for the study participant throughout the project. And just to sum up, the theory developed in this paper, the paper proposed a design theory, and the main contribution there was basically the proposed set of design principles, and those were first the knowledge capture principle, and that was to truly understand populations' preferences, reasoning and values in requirements acquisition. And second, there was the subpopulation knowledge capture principle for understanding subpopulation preferences. And then we have the ability to imagine principle that favored the use of lead users and the indirect enablement of populations that are inexperienced with new technologies and are risk averse. And fourth, we have the participation ability principle, which helps us to overcome limitations to participation through technical and procedural accommodation. And finally, we have the convergent understanding principle, which suggests that it's important to achieve a joint understanding of the population's preferences in their underlying values in the requirements acquisition activities. As per the knowledge capture principle, to truly understand users, we need to explore how they perceive and experience value. Taking a deeper view to value, Helpful and others explained in their paper that value for the user emerges across three temporal dimensions, past and currently lived experiences, and future expectations. These dimensions are explained to be interwoven, continually influencing one another in a cycle of meaning-making and, importantly, value here unfolds along two key dimensions, the individual and the social. This is presented in the paper in this figure one, the hermeneutical spiral. On the individual level, value is said to arise from deeply personal interpretations and experiences of a service. And on the social level, it's shaped through the shared meanings and collective interactions with other users. Take Instagram, for example. A photographer posting their work might derive what we could call currently lived value from likes and comments, and that could manifest as immediate feedback that provides personal gratification at the individual level, which would further on reinforce value at the social level through a sense of social connection within the photographer's network. Their experience would also be shaped by the photographer's past, such as previous successful posts or memorable interactions, and by future expectations like hopes of building their brand or gaining recognition for their photography business. And so this interplay between individual interpretation and social interaction forms a rich layered experience of value. As individual and social past, present, and future experiences and expectations continuously inform and shape one another, we really cannot always know what would be of value for our users without some quite good intel and data about their life circles and so on. In a previous study, we were investigating user value in the context of green information systems, meaning systems such as carbon footprint calculators and other sustainability initiatives. We found that one of the most pressing issues in the design of such systems has been that they tend to rely on the assumption that pro-environmental behavior change could be generated by simply providing users with sustainability-related information, like how much carbon they're emitting and so forth. However, as we now know, people make decisions not just based on data or facts, but their underlying values, personal goals, and social context as well. Yet, most digital sustainability initiatives tend to target broad, pre-selected goals, basically assuming that the targeted users would respond to the same goals. And the initiatives usually don't end up being all that successful, which is a shame given the critical need to shift people's unsustainable and unhealthy consumption habits toward more pro-environmental behavior. So we need to understand why might users engage with these systems, and we were hoping to use this insight to create design knowledge for moving beyond just offering sustainability information and toward creating systems that resonate with users. And so with this backdrop, we set to answer our research question on how can green information systems users be categorized by their values by using qualitative interviews with users to develop a preliminary user typology. The study was conducted in collaboration with the Keskimaa Co-op, which is part of the S Group, and we used the laddering interviewing technique with their customers. The study had 217 customers interviewed in total, and the interviews basically focused on the deep-seated user values by probing the participants to explain why certain system features in these digital initiatives were important or significant to them when engaging with these initiatives. With this laddering technique, we were able to connect the system feature level attributes of green information systems to the end goals and values that might have driven users' behavior. And so the data could be used to explain why users engaged with these systems. As an example, one of the data change might start with a system feature that allowed users to view ecological alternatives for groceries while shopping in the brick and mortar store. And this would then lead to increased awareness of emissions and ultimately to the user's underlying desire to be more sustainable as an end goal. Well, we then analyzed the coded data using hierarchical clustering, which basically allowed the identification of patterns and groups among the coded laddering chains. Through this process, we developed a preliminary 7-cluster user typology that centered around user value that were driving green information systems use in this case. Our analysis and the sense making of the 7-cluster solution was based on the most empathic constructs that emerged, meaning those codes in our analysis that appeared most frequently in the interview data in each cluster. So our first user type was somewhat obvious. It was the eco-conscious optimizers who used the studied digital sustainability initiatives because they aligned with their deep-seated concern for the environment. Whereas we found the health advocates who were primarily focused on improving their physical and mental well-being. And we found community-oriented and emotion-conscious who were influenced heavily by social approval and emotional well-being. For these users, it would be important to feel good about their actions and they might appreciate the emotional satisfaction that comes from making socially responsible and acceptable choices. We then have the lifestyle enhancers, a group that values time management and efficiency above other aspects, whereas pragmatic economists were primarily motivated by saving money, making financially sound decisions, and ensuring economic security. Independent self-improvers then was driven by a desire for personal development and autonomy, such as choosing eco-friendly products based on the information that was provided by the system. Whereas the last type, the curiosity seekers, they were motivated by an overall desire for exploration of new features and the excitement of discovering something new. So this typology contributes with a rich understanding of the diverse user values that could drive different users' engagement with green information systems, such as the one of Keskimaa or S Group. The laddering technique was a powerful tool for uncovering these deep, often hidden motivations of green information system users by connecting system features to user values. In specific, our findings highlight the need for more personalized features within green information systems. It seems highly unsustainable to offer standardized or static value offerings to entire populations or customer groups, whereas it's clear that users are diverse and they have diverse value drivers impacted by dynamically changing situations and contexts. For instance, environmental feedback will draw eco-conscious optimizers, but health advocates are likely to benefit from features that focus on health-related metrics and stress reduction, whereas lifestyle enhancers might respond best to time-saving features and automation that could help optimize their personal time, and so on. And moving forward, we're currently looking into making connections between the derived user types and specific system features to create more precise design tools for GreenIS. We see that valid user typology could be used to propose design guidelines for developing a baseline for adaptive GreenIS that could be then personalized and adapted based on continuous user input and contextual factors. So ultimately, we consider that in the future, it's important to move beyond design for user groups or even user types toward design that continuously adapts according to feedback loops of individual user data. To sum up, it's good to know that understanding users is not merely about connecting data or imagining their needs. It's about deeply engaging with their values, experiences, and contexts. From population-targeted requirements acquisition to the dynamic interplay between individual and social dimensions of value, we've seen that designing for users requires more than just functionality. It demands empathy, adaptability, and continuous dialogue. It's a crucial yet fascinating challenge for providers to understand how users may co-create value and how their engagement might be shaped in a given service by a complex web of motivations, preferences, and social systems and situations. As we continue to explore digital service design, let's remember that successful services are those that resonate with users at a deeper level, acknowledging their diversity, empowering their participation in system design, and ultimately creating value that is meaningful, impactful, and enduring. This all highlights the importance of moving beyond static design models toward digitally enabled systems that dynamically adapt to users' evolving contexts in innovative ways. And this is something that we can further explore in service design.